You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, this is Tim Rice, and this is Get Onto My Cloud, episode 29. Chess as fiction is in the news. Okay, not thanks to our musical Chess, but it gives me an excuse to return to more stories about the creation of the piece I wrote with Bjørn Ulvaeus and Benny Andersson in 1983 and 1984. Actually, I was going to return to it anyway. But thanks to the huge success of The Queen's Gambit, a 7-part television drama about an orphan girl who wants to become world chess champion, Chess the Game, or Sport, has been in the spotlight with many commentators expressing surprise and delight that chess could be made so dramatic and sexy. I thought The Queen's Gambit was very good. The performances of Anya Taylor-Joy as Beth Harmon, the chess prodigy who becomes a champion, of Marielle Heller as Beth's adoptive mother, and indeed of the entire supporting cast, are superb. The music and fashion of the era in which the story takes place, beginning in a bleak orphanage in the 1950s, are accurately and evocatively employed. The recordings include tracks by Herman's Hermits, Peggy Lee, and Martha and the Vandellas, all framed within a sensuous score by Carlos Rafael Rivera. The series was created by Scott Frank, who also directed, and Alan Scott, adapted from the 1983 novel by the late Walter Tevis. I recommend it highly for everyone who finds time weighing heavily in their hands, as indeed I recommend chess itself, as the perfect occupation for a pandemic lockdown. You could always find someone to play with online. Chess, thanks to The Queen's Gambit, is enjoying a boom, but as an intellectual pursuit that's been in existence for more than a millennium, is hardly in need of a 21st century film series to keep it going for a little while longer. Nor, for that matter, did it need Chess the Musical in the late 20th century. However, for obvious reasons, I'm delighted that chess is back in the wider public consciousness, and in watching The Queen's Gambit, I was encouraged to see how similar our portrayal of the chess world was back in 1983. Coincidentally, the exact year that Walter Tevis' novel came out, although I'm ashamed to say I'd never heard of it, or him, until this year. I should have done, because Walter Tevis, an American novelist, wrote other books which I had heard of, because they too became major film projects, Hud and The Colour of Money, both Paul Newman movie successes, and The Man Who Fell to Earth, which became a film starring David Bowie. Tevis died in August 1984. 2 months before the release of Chess, our double album. Like the creators of The Queen's Gambit, I did a lot of research into the history and latest developments into chess and its world, which in the early 80s centered around Anatoly Karpov, Viktor Korchnoi, Boris Spassky, and the king across the water, the self-exiled Bobby Fischer. I actually attended the World Chess Championship in Murano in 1981 between Karpov and Korchnoi, won by Karpov. Thus, the magical Tyrolean setting of Murano became the venue for Act One of our show. The big scene in chess in which Anatoly and Florence find their falling in love takes place in a Murano mountain inn, eventually known as the Mountain Duet. We worked on this the way we did on many scenes. I would outline what the scene should say and achieve. Benny would create the music with Bjorn, or they would delve into their magnificent trove of unused melody, and then Bjorn would write words that acted as a guide for my final lyrics, illustrating where and when, who sang what. In the case of Mountain Duet, Elaine Page and Tommy Korberg actually recorded Bjorn's words, which helped me no end when I came to write the finished lyrics. They sang the temporary words as beautifully as they did the final ones. Here is that interim version.
I believe this is the first time you and I meet by ourselves. It seems we're always surrounded by crowds everywhere.
The fans and the damned hangers-on drive me mad at times, but then again, I love the game.
I understand you completely. That's why I thought of this place, to see you and get to know you.
I'm glad that you're being candid, for you see, in fact, I came to this meeting because of you.
You seem to forget you came here to see Mr. Mastermind.
I won't be honored, it seems, by his presence tonight.
Well, I just couldn't care less. Frankly, I never saw any point in us meeting here in the first place.
You agree that the match must go on.
Yes, and the cohorts the Kremlin has sent, they know where I am at this minute, and I want those fools off my back. You see, others are depending on me.
If I can help you, let me know, please. I can imagine how you must feel.
Tell the truth, I am delighted.
And I was wondering that my feelings were shown. Thinking I was an open book. People don't see, although they look. Do you mean what I wish you mean? Can I believe in what I read?
You say if I told you you have been secretly watched?
Nothing unusual. In fact, it's no surprise at all.
You've spies crawling under your bed all the time.
What I mean is that I've been thinking about you.
I see your face haunting me nighttime and day alike.
I don't believe it, you're always so cool and detached. My occupational disease, underneath this restrained intellectual mask, I'm just longing to be someone you would consider to give a chance. What am I to do? I am falling in love. I wish you were too.
Around the time our Chess album came out, I actually participated in an important match between future world champion Garry Kasparov and Viktor Korchnoi by making the first move in one of their games. At least, I was moving the pawn as ordered by Korchnoi. This was all a publicity stunt to promote both our album and the chess event itself. Korchnoi lost, which I hope wasn't because of the opening move. During my early research, I got to know several British chess masters and grandmasters who were enormously helpful to me, including Raymond Keane and Bill Hartston, and also got to know Anatoly Karpov, whom I had the great pleasure of meeting again in Moscow in early 2020 during rehearsals and auditions for chess just before the 2020 lockdown. Incidentally, the pandemic didn't prevent the glamorous and successful opening of chess in Moscow in October this year, 2020, although none of the show's writers have at the time of this podcast been to see it. It may need to run for quite a while for that to happen. One chess historical fact I did not manage to include, by the way, was that William the Conqueror once allegedly broke a chessboard over the head of the Prince of France after losing a game of chess. But I digress. Here's another chess winner, if I may be so modest. Its final version featured Murray Head along with Anders Glenmark in the choruses. This earlier version has words by Björn, Ulvaeus, and vocals by the terrific Bjorn Skifs.
And Gomorrah, the city you're in is a pit of pure horror. Don't keep money in your pocket, put it in a safe and be sure you lock it. You better be careful. Right here, things are gonna happen. The reason for my same is singing and rapping. I hope you didn't bring your mother. Tighten your belt, cause we're taking off, brother. You're gonna take the trip of your life, my friend. One night. The plays have arrived, it's a Robert and a Sissy. Those guys gonna go bananas. You're in for a fight, so forget about your manners. I think you're gonna like it. I got the funny way yelling, but doesn't it fit with the story I'm telling? This is an honor to the city, by coming here being clever and witty. Are you ready for a ride? Are you ready, my friend? One night.
Note I kept Bjorn's great chorus, One Night in Bangkok Makes a Hard Man Humble, with only a couple of tweaks. When Andrew Lloyd Webber heard the finished album, or at least that song, he was extremely complimentary about it and told me that he loved the lines, One Night in Bangkok Makes a Hard Man Humble, One Night in Bangkok and the Tough Guys Tumble. Very you, he said to me. Should I admit that they weren't my lines? It took me a moment or two to confess that he'd picked out two superb Ulvaeus lines. I assume he thought one or two other bits of mine were okay, but obviously they were the ones that struck him. Bjorn Skifs, a very well-known Swedish singer, whose record with Blues Swede of Hooked on a Feeling was a number one hit in the United States in 1974, took the part of the Arbiter on the Chess album. The places mentioned in One Night in Bangkok are not simply random geographical selections or my last three holiday destinations, but actual venues that hosted major chess championships. Iceland, where Fischer beat Spassky in 1972, the Philippines, where Karpov beat Korchnoi 3 years before their 81 Murano battle, and Hastings, which has long been the centre of the UK chess world ever since the 1895 tournament there, considered at the time to be the strongest tournament in chess history ever staged. The reigning world champion Emmanuel Lasker took part, but only came third, and another world chap, Wilhelm Steinitz, came in fifth out of 22 contenders. The winner was a young American, Harry Pillsbury, who never became world champion. The US had to wait nearly 80 years for Bobby Fischer, the Donald Trump of chess, for their next world number one. As obscure venues were usually chosen for world chess tournaments in order to avoid too much political interference, I thought Bangkok would be as plausible as anywhere. I'm rabbiting on with all this chess information not purely to show off, but to illustrate how the three of us were very keen to be accurate when dealing with such a worldwide enthusiasm. Everyone I met from the world of chess, whatever they thought of the artistic merits of the show, complimented me on the accuracy and plausibility of story and characters. Those in the theatre world were sometimes not so clued in. It was a bit galling to read that the Sunday Times capsule review of chess in the West End stated week after week in its theatre listings that our show struggled with a ridiculous plot. This, when the most popular and praised show in the West End featured a deformed magician-come-composer in a mask hiding in an opera house for decades in order to pursue a young singer. I think I've got that right. If anything, musicals work best when removed from reality. Not that chess was. Chess the Musical actually mentions all world champions and their dates, from Steinitz in 1886 until Karpov a century later, in the long, truly operatic endgame sequence, which also includes a potted history of chess, a crunch match for the world championship and a marital explosion, in both of which Anatoly triumphs, and a final love song for Florence and Anatoly, much of which has been totally missed in live performances by theatre audiences denied surtitles. But perhaps the equally well-researched Queen's Gambit will lead people to have a closer look at chess and listen to Benny's sensational orchestral work coupled with the crib sheet of the words. Or not, as the music is stirring enough on its own. Anyway, here's the start of Endgame. When this was played live in the Albert Hall 10 years ago, with names, pictures and dates on a screen, it became, for my money, twice as compelling, brutally emphasising the transience of champions, of arguments, of winning and losing, of everything, including love and life, which was not really my original intention. There again, with the voices of the quality of the Ambrosian singers, of Dennis Quilley, Murray Head and Elaine Page, it almost doesn't matter what they say.
straightforward the game. When one has trust in one's player, and how great the relief, working for one who believes in loyalty, heritage, true to his kind, come what may.
Though it gives me no joy, adding to your satisfaction, you can safely assume your late unlamented employee knows if he wins, and the only thing won is the chess.
It's the weak who accept tawdry untruths about freedom, prostituting themselves, chasing a spurious starlight, trinkets in airports sufficient to lead them astray.
Does the player exist in any human endeavor who's been known to resist sirens of fame and possessions? They will destroy you, not rivals, not age, not success.
That was episode 29 of my podcast, Get Onto My Cloud, written and presented by Tim Rice and produced by Peter Holmes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUFS. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, SUFS celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUFS has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.